On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to Thursday, the 23rd of May, 2025 edition of On the Radar. As the weekend draws closer, we bring you the latest news, making headlines across the nation and beyond, keeping you informed, engaged, and ahead of the curve. I am your host, Sean Jordan Usip, and this is On the Radar. From developments in the business and political spheres to technology, education, health, and community impact, On the Radar is your go-to source for reliable news, insightful analysis, and exclusive interviews. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM. Remember, you can stay connected via our Eagle FM mobile app, our website, and our radio frequencies across the country. Be sure to subscribe to the Villager WhatsApp for up-to-the-minute alerts. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. Join the conversation by calling us in studio at 083-2888-401. Stay tuned. There's plenty to unpack on today's show. Let's get started with today's news. Namibia hosted the 21st General Assembly of the World Federation of Democratic Youth on the 22nd of May 2025 at the University of Namibia Stadium in Windhoek. The event brought together youth delegates, civil society representatives, and government officials from across various countries. In her keynote address, President Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah emphasized youth participation in global matters. She also stated Namibia's support for the Palestinian cause and called for the removal of sanctions on Cuba, Venezuela, and Zimbabwe. The General Assembly will include leadership elections and thematic commissions on topics such as climate change, employment, education access, and anti-colonial resistance. Established in 1945, the World Federation for Democratic Youth is an international organization focused on youth cooperation and political advocacy. The event was co-organized by the National Youth Council of Namibia and the Swapo Party Youth League, with support from government ministries and civil society organizations. Cultural exhibitions and regional presentations form part of the opening program. The assembly is scheduled to run and continue over the coming days, with delegates expected to define strategic priorities and elect a new leadership collective.
One needs a different approach whereby young people can make use of their skill and knowledge to play a significant role in the economies of their countries and the economy of the world. In doing so, the youth will be part of the solution to the challenges faced today, including unemployment that is affecting the young people. The world requires more programmatic trade and investment instruments to bring about a balanced, sustainable world economic order. Dear delegates, with increased demand of critical mineral resources, most of which is found in the global south, as young people, you should not be fence seekers. Young people of the world must therefore demand and fight for a fair international trade to drive economic development and growth for social transformation for all citizens of the world. Against this background, it's vital and commendable for the young people of the world to get involved also in the political economic discussions in order for us to have a just program. And the WFD cannot just confine now to its political mobilization, but should all start to demand for fair trade among nations so that the young people and the people of the world. Very critical, as we can see that the world trade instruments are under threat. And should that be allowed, it could be a disaster for the future generation.
Are you thinking of stepping away? Don't. We're just getting started, and we have a lot more coming your way. So stay right with us, only on Eagle FM.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.2.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Oulio mnangeshefa na wahara kushivika oma kuroe kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mkulu olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi kono raheta tuimwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 081-7147-116. Mwamberewa kono raheta tu natu, mbali o heta tu vatatu, ne no la no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo mone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Did you know that in Namibia over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Oulio mnangeshefa na wahara kushivika oma kuroe kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mkulu olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi kono raheta tuimwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 081-7147-116. Mwamberewa kono raheta tu natu, mbali o heta tu vatatu, ne no la no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who no, does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person.
And welcome back. In other news, China's ambassador to Namibia, Zhao Weiping, hosted his first media conference of the year at the Chinese embassy in Windhoek, reaffirming the long-standing relationship between the two countries. The ambassador noted that Namibia was the first African country visited by the Chinese foreign minister Wang Yi during his annual Africa tour. During the visit, Minister Wang met with both former President Angolo Mbumba and President Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwa, underscoring the strategic importance of Namibia-China relations. In a show of solidarity, the Chinese government assisted with national memorial arrangements earlier this year by sending a pilot to help transport the remains of late founding president Sam Nujoma. Ambassador Zhao praised Namibia's new administration for its commitment to deepening cooperation with China. He highlighted ongoing Chinese-supported projects, including police and social housing, borehole drilling, and a smart city pilot, all outcomes of the 2024 Beijing FOCAC summit. China has also provided food assistance to support Namibia's drought relief efforts. According to the ambassador, the first shipment arrived in January and was distributed to affected communities. A second consignment is expected soon. Trade cooperation continues to grow. China recently signed a memorandum of understanding with the Namibia Revenue Agency to improve customs procedures and promote exports. Agreements were also reached with the Minister of Agriculture to enable the export of Namibian meat products to China. The two countries are currently in talks to expand trade to include more agricultural and aquatic products. Ambassador Zhao emphasized China's interest in increasing imports from Namibia and encouraging Chinese enterprises to invest further in the country. The conference concluded with a focus on future cooperation in agriculture, vocational training, and investment development. My colleague, Gilunanye Michael Pietras, joins us today for a better insight into the matter. Welcome to OTR. How are you doing?
No, I'm doing great. Good afternoon to you.
Good, thank you. So our first question would be, how would you assess the current state of economic relations between Namibia and China, particularly in light of recent developments such as new trade agreements and ongoing infrastructure projects?
Yeah, I would say it is very important for a country to keep assessing it, bilateral or multilateral relationship with any other country. And I think Namibia need really to take a look at, because we keep saying that, you know, if you listen to our policymakers, in many cases we just use the trade statistics, the flow of import and export, and also the donations and all that. Then we say, no, our relationship with this particular country is great. They donated this and this, or they did this and this. But we need to take a serious assessment of what is this relationship entail? How do we benefit beyond donations? So if I can answer your question straight, I'll say yes. According to the trade statistics, Namibia, China is one of the biggest trading partner for Namibia. And even beyond the trade statistics, if you look at the things that are flowing to China, because we export uranium there and also copper. And if you look at now the trade deficit or the trade surplus, if you assess, because of the value of uranium and the value of copper that we export to China, we find ourselves to be in a trade surplus with them. And that is a positive for a country. But it's just because of the value of the commodity. And you as a country, you do not just want one expensive commodity that you're selling to the rest of the world. No, you want to export more product. Especially at the stage where we are about diversifying our economy, we want to export more of our product. So when people look at now the trade statistics, especially what is flowing to China and what China is importing from us, then they get, no, the relationship is great. We are trading with China. The value is big. It's a trade surplus. But you have to zoom in into the statistic and to what are we exporting? What is China buying from us? And how does it translate into economic development of our country? And yes, so that's why in a nutshell, I would say So far, the trade statistics are indicating that there's some good positive relationship in terms of trade matters. And also, if you go beyond that, look at the Chinese companies that are participating in our economy, especially in the infrastructure sector. So if you look at that, the number of Chinese participating in the Namibian economy, and you look at the donation coming from China, you look at the trade statistics, then the normal economists will say, ah, man, the relationship is great. We are doing great with China. But when I assessed it and its benefit, its contribution to the national agenda, to our aspiration to diversify and to add value to our product, then I'll put a question mark. I'll put a question mark to say, we are not at the level yet to say this relationship is great. It's not that it's negative or anything, but it is to say, if you assess based on our national aspiration, what you want to achieve, in terms of value addition and solving inequality and reducing poverty, I would say no, we are not there yet. We need to derive more value from this partnership. So that is where I will conclude to say, we need to derive more value. If we're having Chinese companies that are here, we need to derive more value. What are we getting more from them? Especially in the infrastructure sector. What are we exporting to China? Why are they donating food? Why do we have agricultural land that needs to be cultivated? How about we change the status quo to say, we produce the food here, you fund, you provide capital. So I think at such a level, I would say, we need to derive more value. And moving forward, like the conversation now, the new agreement that they have signed, where China is going to participate in gold drilling. I think this one is one of the good ideas, because Namibia is an arid country, and that is how you derive more value from your partnership, especially from your big partner with more capital and with more skill set.
Okay, I see. The Chinese government has committed to supporting Namibia's development goals, including projects in housing, agriculture, and smart city initiatives. From an economic standpoint, what are the potential benefits and risks of relying on such bilateral development support?
Look, I'm not a policymaker or sit at the table, the highest table, but I think there are certain sectors or certain things that we can do ourselves. And I'll say this. We have an economic structure which has been based on exclusion, meaning that only a certain race or certain pre-colonial advantage companies or individuals that have leaned to the colonial past that have been dominating the economy. And if you look, there are certain sectors where a simple Namibian from Okangwati can actually participate in making it big. And those sectors are like housing. Those are like agriculture. And if you now go in a partnership with a bigger country like China, and again you allow their well-equipped and well-capitalized company again to enter into such a sector where your normal Kanjengo can participate, then I think there's going to be more problems. Because these colleagues, the Chinese companies, are already in the infrastructure. You cannot beat them. If you go in a tender with them, you will never win. And that's already in infrastructure. So we are already seeing how the construction sector has been suffering, because many Namibians are no more actually getting the tenders because they are being outnumbered and outbid by the Chinese colleagues who are well-equipped and well-capitalized. So we have to be very, very careful. Which sector do we need help and what type of help? And I'm repeating this again. It's okay to partner up with China in such a sector like housing. But do you really, really have a problem in housing in terms of delivering or producing a house? And Namibia not capable to building the proper house that you are looking for. So we have to ask it those difficult questions. So when the government is saying they are going to partner up or go in a relationship to this extent, at what level? Because if you look at it, the Chinese are already owning the cement industry. They are dominating in the construction sector. Now, if you also allow them to go to such a level of the one being going to develop their houses, they are going to dominate the whole supply and value chain. And now you ask yourself, how do you reduce poverty? How do you reduce inequality, especially the income inequality? You don't reduce it by limiting yourself to receive salaries.
Okay.
So we have to be very, very careful when we say we're going into in partnership, so we need to ask our government to say, when you're talking about housing and agriculture and others, to what extent is China going to be involved? So you give a clarity, and making sure you do not crowd out your people that are capable to deliver, but they are just limited by a few things like capital and the cost of machinery and equipment. And so you need to assess the gap of among your people so that you can actually go in partnership knowing what is needed, what is missing from your own people.
Precisely. Mm. All right. China has expressed interest in increasing imports of Namibian meat and other agricultural products. In your expert opinion, what impact could this have on Namibia's agricultural sector, both in terms of export revenue and local production capacity?
No, on that development, I think that is really, really good. And I think that's why I say we need to derive more value from our relationship with China. They opened our market for our beef.
Yes.
But we have more in the agricultural sector. We have dates. We have grapes. We can actually produce more. And if you look at one of the issues that we have right now is that our farmers do not have access to the market or do not have off-takers.
Yes.
So if we can actually open that market, the Chinese side, so that our farmers can actually export and sell, that would be beautiful. That would be a big deal. And I think that will fulfill now what I said earlier, to say that we need to derive more value from this relationship. If our government or policymaker can open that relationship, we just need to be careful that who is going to produce. So we cannot ever give access to our land and to our water for Chinese company, Chinese investor to be the one producing and export to China. Then we say we are benefiting. No. So China open their market. Let our farmer be able to produce. Let our farmer be equipped. Let our farmer have access to capital so that they can meet the type of standard that China is looking for.
Yes.
When we export. I think at such a level, it would be a big deal, especially now where if you look in the pig sector, if you look in the lamb sector,
yes,
in all those sectors are producing below capacity. Why? Because of access to market. And if our government can, our policymaker can actually now utilize that relationship between China and Namibia to open up a market for lamb and also for pork, then our farmers are going to produce beyond what they are producing now because they will have access to market.
Mm.
So I think that is really, really a big deal, and it's in line with our aspiration of diversifying our export market and also our export basket. So it just needs to be communicated very well so that the farmers can actually start preparing, so that the financial institution can actually open their doors to issue capital or for the farmers to access capital so that they can produce at such a level they can fulfill the market as it being opened.
Yes. Mm. Finally, going off of your last point, Chinese enterprises have been encouraged to increase investment in Namibia. So in your expert opinion, what policy measures should Namibia consider to ensure these investments contribute to local employment, skills development, and long-term economic sustainability?
Yeah, and that is where now the most important component of every relationship that you go into, sir, is that you need to be ready. And I think our government, this is what I've observed from my government, whoever is for from my ministry,
yes,
we go ahead to develop markets, but we do not prepare our people internally. I'm repeating this again. We rush to develop. I don't want to say rush. We open the European market. But guess what right now? We are not fulfilling that market. We open the USA market. We open the Middle East market. But guess what? We do minimal internally to provide a conducive and enabling market, environment that will enable our business people, whether they are farmers or whoever they are, to actually produce and fulfill that market.
Precisely.
So what we need to do as a country, as a government and all the stakeholders, that now once this market is open, the ministry now need to hold a session, information session. What is this market is all about? So that we can invite all the bankers and the asset managers and all the business that are interested, so they know that you can now export your lamb meat to China. And once these stakeholders, financials and business people hear this, they are able to work together. Then we also talk to the relevant ministry. which is actually the custodian of such a sector, so that they can talk to the entrepreneur that for me to produce more lamb meat, for me to produce more dates, what is it preventing me from doing it? Is it the cost of water, electricity? And what can you as a ministry do to create the environment for me to be able to produce more and fulfill the market or supply the market as you have opened it up? That is what is missing.
Yes.
We have more official flying to outside to talk and to connect, and we have less official working on fixing the environment where the business people are operating from.
Precisely, precisely. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for calling in today to On the Radar. We appreciate your expert opinion.
All right, sir. Thank you so much for conducting.
All right. And that was economist Ngilomemwa Vali Erastus live on the Radar. In other news, the United States has announced a new Africa strategy under the banner of commercial diplomacy, which shifts the focus from development aid to trade-based engagement. The initiative, introduced under the Trump administration, aims to strengthen business ties with the continent. However, the strategy has raised concerns among policy analysts and trade experts. While the plan promotes U.S. exports and investments, it does not include new provisions for African market access to or financing support for African businesses. Key U.S. trade agencies, including the U.S. Trade and Development Agency, remain suspended in relation to African operations. Observers also note that the strategy does not address the future of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or the AGOA, which is set to expire. AGOA has been a key trade mechanism, providing eligible African countries with duty-free access to the U.S. market. Critics argue that the current approach prioritizes American commercial interests with limited attention to reciprocal development goals. In response, African governments are being encouraged to advocate for revised trade terms that reflect equitable economic benefits and long-term development objectives. My colleague, Gilunanya Petrus, Michael Petrus, joins us today for better insight into the matter. Welcome to the OTR.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So our first question will be, there's been a lot of talk about trade instead of aid, right?
Yeah.
From the U.S. Ambassador Fittrell. But what does that mean for African countries and the average African citizen?
Well, when we hear the phrase trade instead of aid, it might sound like a promising change, you know, one that moves away from donor dependency and moves towards building real economic partnerships between the United States and Africa.
Mm.
But when we look at the details of the actual U.S. policy announced by the U.S. Ambassador Fittrell, the picture becomes even more complex. Essentially, the Trump administration's Africa strategy, which is branded as you said, commercial diplomacy, in plain terms just means the U.S. embassies across, the U.S. embassies across the continent, rather than focusing on traditional aid, are going to be pushing American business interests.
Understood. Wow, that's very interesting.
Okay. They're going to be, like I said, the embassies, traditional aid, of course, they're going to be trying to close deals connecting U.S. exporters to local African markets.
Right.
And promoting U.S. goods and services across all African corners.
Okay.
Now, when we talk about this, this could potentially bring benefits. I'm not going to lie. African governments always have room to welcome new investments, especially in sectors like infrastructure or energy.
Right.
You know, like, for example, in Namibia, not too long ago, Halliburton, an American energy company, partnered up with the Namibian government and is set to create 200 jobs, going based off what they said, yeah. And they'd be doing this through, you know, Namibia's discovered oil reserves. But to dial it down for the average African, the impact isn't necessarily clear. This new approach doesn't come with a direct or support for small African businesses.
I see.
Neither does it offer the access for African products to enter U.S. markets. And nor does it mention programs that helped de-risk or support early stage projects by African businesses. Meanwhile, the word export appears repeatedly, but always in reference to U.S. exporting to Africa and not the other way around.
I see.
I believe this all points to as you said, a one-way trade model. The Trump administration wants Africa to open its markets to American products, but it's not offering much in return. Again, there's no talk of making it easier for African goods to reach U.S. shelves, no talk of supporting African entrepreneurs, no financing tools to help African businesses grow, and that's a real concern.
I see.
I would say to answer your question, what does that mean for everyday people? It means that the benefits of this policy may trickle down, or I would say may not trickle down, unless African governments step in to make sure the local entrepreneurs and workers are actually included in these deals. Yeah.
All right. Well, then going off of what you said, my next question would then have to be how the U.S. usually says it wants to promote trade and investment in Africa, but without offering more access to U.S. markets or real support for African exports. Should the public be concerned that this is just another form of economic extraction dressed up as a partnership?
Well, yeah, that's a valid concern. Well, the United States is saying it wants to increase trade within Africa, but so far it's mostly focused on how to get American goods and companies into African markets. There hasn't been much mention of how African producers can get their goods into the U.S. So what we're seeing here is a strong push for U.S. exports, but no offers to help African industries grow or add value to their raw materials or scale up their manufacturing.
Right.
The things that I just mentioned, there also hasn't been any mention of simplifying the African export process. African businesses or helping them meet the U.S. safety package standards. These are the barriers that small business owners in Africa face when trying to breach the American market.
I see.
This is why some experts say the strategy resembles older models of economic extraction where, Africa is dependent on America for aid.
Yes.
Where it's not just exporting raw materials, but also letting American companies infiltrate the market in Africa.
Yes.
Well, if African economies are just going to be seen as markets to sell to or as, sources of raw materials, but not as equal trade partners, then the public does have reason to question how fair this partnership really is.
I see.
Yeah. But I want to point out that it doesn't mean trade is bad, but it does mean people should pay close attention to the terms of engagement, like who's benefiting and who's being left out.
Precisely. That's an interesting point, though, because it does lead me to my next question, specifically with how the U.S. is shifting away from development aid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And towards a more business-focused diplomacy, especially with African countries. So how should African governments respond to this to ensure their interests aren't sidelined? Because this does seem like, from the outset, this does seem like something that benefits the U.S. more.
Right. Well, this shift in the U.S. policy, African governments are being put in positions where they have to now do a lot more negotiating.
I see.
A lot more protecting of their own national interests.
I see.
What experts are saying, outside, is that African governments need to make sure any deals signed under this new U.S. approach are mutually beneficial.
Mm.
That means pushing for more things like local hiring, technology transfer, and support for domestic industries. If American companies want to build roads or power plants, for example, local workers should be part of the project, and local suppliers should get a share of the contract.
Precisely.
Right. I believe another smart move would be to negotiate as a bloc rather than a country by country situation.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. The African Continental Free Trade Area, the AFCFTA gives countries a chance to present a united front, which increases bargaining power. And it also helps ensure the trade and investment deals align with Africa's own long-term development goals. Sorry.
I see.
But essentially how this goes, as from country to country, is all dependent on their individual governments.
I see.
African governments are actively being encouraged and should be more encouraged, I would say, to invest in their own trade infrastructure. Things like, ports, if they have them, things like custom reforms, training programs for exports, et cetera. Ideally, if African countries would get the most of their trade partnerships, they need to be prepared, not just politically, but practically.
Exactly.
And finally, there's also like an issue of public engagement in trade policy. You know, trade policy shouldn't be decided behind closed doors. You know, the citizens and business owners and, of course, civil society groups that make up Africa all have stakes in these decisions, and they need to be part of the conversation. The more transparent the process, I believe, the more likely it is to trade the deals better.
Exactly, exactly.
So, in short, African governments have a big role to play here. If they negotiate strategically and focus on inclusive growth, they can turn the shift into an opportunity. But if they don't, there's a real risk that this new model could repeat old patterns, which, with Africa providing the raw materials and others reaping the profits.
Wow, that was quite insightful. That was my colleague Ngilu Nanye Michael Pietras joining us today on the radar. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you again.
Cool, cool. Have you downloaded the Eagle FM app yet? Stay connected to your favorite shows and podcasts all at your fingertips. Search for Eagle FM Namibia on the App Store or Google Play and never miss a moment. But for now, we take a trip to the marketplace. Stay tuned.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Welcome back. Meanwhile, in some cybersecurity news, South Africa has introduced a new regulation aimed at strengthening cybersecurity in the financial sector. The measure, announced on the 15th of May by the Financial Sector Conduct Authority and the Prudential Authority, outlines standards for preventing, responding to, and recovering from cyber threats. The regulation requires banks, insurers, pension funds and other financial institutions to implement formal cybersecurity strategies and conduct regular system testing. All employees, including executives, must undergo cybersecurity training, while third-party service providers are expected to meet the same security standards. Tanya Hopka, a cybersecurity awareness specialist at Maynard Cybersecurity, said the regulation marks a shift from reaction to preparation. She emphasized that the rules apply to institutions of all sizes. Namibian companies are being encouraged to adopt this framework as a model for local cybersecurity practices. Authorities do say, though, that the regulation aims to build trust and enhance digital reliance across the financial system. Earlier, I sat down and spoke to Tanya Hopka to engage more on this topic. All right. So could you just tell us what new cybersecurity regulation has South Africa introduced for its financial sector and which authorities are responsible for it?
The law is called the Joint Standard 2 of 2024 on cybersecurity and cyber resilience. It comes into effect on 1 June this year, so in a few days, and it was issued jointly by South Africa's Financial Conduct South Africa's Financial Sector Conduct Authority and the Prudential Authority. The law covers all sorts of aspects relating to cybersecurity. So talking about policy, prevention measures, what to do in the event when an attack is happening, and how to actually bounce back from the attack. That's called the cyber resilience part. And then all of the things that go around it. The roles, the responsibilities, the governance, etc. It forms a very good framework for what we can do in Namibia, and it governs financial services specifically, but it also requires them to take care that their vendors and their third parties that they work with who handle the sensitive data are also adhering to these standards. So it's a very broad-reaching measure.
Mm. And how are financial institutions in South Africa expected to enhance their cybersecurity under the new regulation?
So there are multiple things that the Act details. It's quite a long list. It covers all sorts of things from roles and responsibility, governance, strategy and framework, identification, so things like using multiple factor authentication, password policies, the fact that, for example, now you have to train your staff, that's not an optional anymore. So there are measures that are very much orientated around the protection, but then there's also things like when an incident occurs, you need to have an incident response plan, and you actually need to have gone through the drills of...
We interrupt this report for a trip to the marketplace. Stay tuned only on the radar.
Onkundana ombwanawa kani hauto. Owa pumbwa oshimaliwa mendelelo. Ndele ouna oshendiso. Ouna anilonga ya pumbwa okufutwa. Ashike mboka ina onjodoe otaende kashona. Ngele onkalamwenyo tayinyengana. Autocash oteiningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto oye etopewa epresenda omirongo ne natano dongushu yoshendiso shoye. Mure ashike wemitetiro omirongo ne natano. Ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge o statement ayombanga. Ohauto yoye ashike. Mona omula oshimaliwa ethimbo weshipumbwa.
Easy money.
Tu dengera nena ko nora hamano yimwe ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Ano ko nora hamano yimwe ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Oshipulera ko autocash.
Continuing on with the report.
Going through the incident response plan. So say, for example, you're a big company and you do fire drills with your staff. You also need to do drills for what you would do in the event of a cyber incident with your staff. Mm. And then it goes on to the resilience part. So how do you recover? Do you need to let your customers know what has happened? You need to notify the people, the suppliers and companies that you work with. And how do you act to be responsible going forward? So it's expected to really up the standard of cybersecurity in South Africa. And as I said, it's not just going to be the financial institutions that are going to be affected. It's going to be all of their third-party suppliers and vendors, the key ones that they work with who handle the sensitive information of the financial institutions.
I see. And of the new regulation, what are some of the highlights for you that the Namibian financial fraternity can take into effect for their own businesses?
Yes, so the Act itself sets out a very, very good blueprint on what businesses can do. Mm. And it's our responsibility as businesses to, of course, protect the business continuity. And therefore, it would be great to look into this as a business and see what are the aspects that we can do as businesses. And what's also nice about the Act is that it's not about the big companies. The law requires that all companies take measures to protect themselves. However, these measures are, of course, in proportion to the size of the company. But there are a lot of low-hanging fruits that all companies in Namibia could implement. So things like strong passwords, multiple factor authentication. Training your staff, I think, is one of the biggest ones. 90% or 95% of attacks actually have a human interaction involved, which means that if you train your staff to identify phishing, identify scams, and prevent them, you've gone a very, very far way in protecting your business.
So what are some of the key requirements of the regulation concerning staff training and third-party service vendors?
So in terms of training, the training needs to be ongoing. So it needs to be a cybersecurity awareness training that is ongoing, which means it's not typically a once-off. And the point is that staff are I would go into best practices now and say what typically happens with the cybersecurity awareness training is that it is an ongoing program. Staff receive continuous education. Typically it's sent to their inbox and they need to do a short course. The course is tracked. We can see generally if they've completed the training or not. And then along with that comes the practical training. So their test phishing emails are sent to the staff, to the employees, and then you can see, have they really paid attention in their training? Will they be able to detect the phishing email? And these phishing emails can be easy ones, which are obviously a scam. But as we see in Namibia, and of course worldwide, hackers tend to put even more effort into some emails, and they can spearfish some people. So they will really research them really well, and then you know, pretend to be, for example, your boss asking you to do a payment. So these kind of things happen. And so with the practical training, you need to make sure that you're actually doing quality practical training and testing people with real-world difficult phishing simulations and seeing if they are able to detect them. In terms of third-party vendors, I would say the requirements here are that a financial institution would need to look at any third-party vendor that they work with and have a discussion with them and put it in the SLA what cybersecurity measures they are taking. And then, of course, it would be up to the financial service provider to ensure that they are happy with this compliance before they work together.
I see. What are some of the common cybersecurity breaches, and how would the new regulation help to eradicate that or minimize those risks?
Some of the most common types of cybersecurity threats are phishing emails. So yes, everybody has an email inbox, and you need it to do your work.
Yes.
So this is a very, very easy place for hackers to target you. And so, for example, we see that two-thirds of ransomware are actually delivered via email. Which means that if your staff are trained and are able to detect phishing emails, you'll go a long way in preventing those two-thirds of ransomware attacks coming through to you. So regulations, or, you know, that training your staff is part of that regulation. And so taking on things like this will really help us to prevent the attacks.
I see. In your opinion, what would the adoption of this regulation look like for the Namibian financial landscape, and how would the government go about enacting and enforcing such a regulation?
So what we could do, not to speak to regulators or so, but what we could do is we could look at the standard that's been implemented in South Africa and use it as a blueprint for best practices. I really do think the Act is far-reaching and very good. And what we could do is we could work to see, would this work in Namibia? Would this work with our Namibian businesses? Could we implement it, or could we implement some aspects of it? And I think if we were to take note of it and take some action there, we would go a very, very far way in protecting not only the businesses in Namibia, but also the consumers, the reputational damage, investors, etc.
I see. Finally, one of the biggest misconceptions about cybersecurity and cybersecurity functions in the financial sector is the relative cost that comes along with securing cybersecurity. So in your opinion, how could you, how would you encourage Namibian businesses to look at the cybersecurity more attentively?
Sure. So some things are really expensive, and things like your IT infrastructure in general may be more expensive. But the thing is, you're going to have that IT infrastructure in place anyway to run your business. So now you just need to put the locks and checks in place to make it a cybersecure infrastructure. However, I must say, probably I'm confident that one of the highest return on income or return on investment spends you can do is to train your staff. Training seems to be one of the cheaper things as compared to redoing your whole network or, you know, buying a whole lot of computers for every staff member. But the training really, it grabs the people who tend – so 95% of attacks include the human interaction. And so if we're able to train the staff – you're actually grabbing almost, you know, 95% of those attacks. So you're having a very, very big impact. While the training is generally not as expensive as the other topics. Mm. And in that training, it covers various things that people need to do to be cyber secure. So it's things like, what is a strong password? Why you should set a strong password? Where you should store your password? Multiple factor authentication, ensuring software updates run. So it's all of these actually small things that you can do for free, that can actually go a far way in protecting the business. It doesn't always have to be so complicated. If you think about who you give login access to, so make sure that only the people that are required to access the data have access to the data and not every single staff member, for example. Password protect certain aspects of your business files, you know, segregate them, protect them. A lot of these things can actually go quite far in protecting your business without necessarily having to spend a lot of money. And what it takes is this mindset shift to think about how you can be secure. Your priority needs to not just be, let me get my business running really well and do sales, but let me also do it securely. And training can really go a far way there, also into shifting the mindset of every staff member to act in a way that protects the business.
I see. Well, thank you so much for your insightful input on this very pressing topic.
Thank you very much, Sean.
All right. In other news, the MTC and the United Nations Namibia signed a Memorandum of Understanding at NUST in Windhoek. Present at the event were officials from MTC, the United Nations, as well as from different ministries. During the signing, the Minister of Information and Communication Technology, Emma Teofilis, delivered a keynote address emphasizing the importance of innovation whilst making use of the country's resources to create employment. She further urged the nation to implement totalization. As I quote, "Totalization isn't an act on its own. It's a means to create a just and equal society." My colleague, Joseph Jeremiah, sat down with the Chief Human Capital and Marketing Officer of MTC, Teme Kanjo, to get more insight on this topic.
Is well-equipped digital infrastructures such as the NAST HTTPS are not accessible to many in Namibia besides commerce. Do we foresee this Memorandum of Understanding assisting to fill such a gap?
Well, before I answer that question, today's event is not about the HTTPS. It's a collaboration between MTC and the UN to close the digital divide. But let me get to your question. HTTPS is owned by NUST. It's a collaboration between NUST and MTC. Despite its location, I think we need to understand the objective of HTTPS. It is to service the entire country. Okay. NUST also has various satellite campuses. This is, you do not physically have to be here to get serviced by the HTTPS. You may sit in Kunene or in the Rangwa region, and you have a case study or a problem that you want to solve. You simply send it by email to the HTTPS, yes. and they will then be able to assist. So the location of the HTTPS is of no significance, but it is what services it provides. And I think, in all fairness, it provides services to the entire country.
Okay, so my last and foremost question is, do we know of how much it will cost for digitalization?
Well, digitalization is quite broad. The MOU that we're signing here today is about digitalization. It's an ongoing process. We haven't costed it in its entirety. MTC have also had a lot of digitalization drives. I think it is important to understand what we mean by digitalization. You'd recall that we had the also smartphone campaign where we've subsidized expensive smartphones, and people could buy them for $200, $300, $400 Namibian dollars. That is, you know, giving access to people that did not have the access. So it's an ongoing process. It's very difficult to cost it. But it's a collaborative effort between not just MTC, but the Ministry of ICT, our regulator, who have, I think in March, between the regulator and the Ministry of ICT, they have made available seed capital of about 140 million as part of the Universal Access Fund, where they would go into rural areas and build connectivity so that our people can benefit. So it's an ongoing process. If we have to cost it, we'll come up with a number that's not going to fit on our calculators, but it is a worthy investment. That's all I can say.
Don't forget to follow us on social media. Catch all the latest updates on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and X at Eagle FM and the Villager newspaper. Now, onto the marketplace.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077. No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Olium nangeshefa no wahara kushivifa oma akuro yo kupitira mohorike radio station ayo yo Eagle FM. Enya mukuro olongaha. Ninge kwatafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konorahita tuimwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 081-7147-116. Mamberewa konorahita tu natu, mbali o hetatu vatatu, ne no la no natu. Nenge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo umoni oshijemo shiri nawa.
Bringing our gift.
Eagle FM. The Eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the Eye.
Welcome back. Now, time for some economic indicators, starting with agricultural commodities. The top commodity losers of the day are cheese at -9.40%, rice at -1.86%, and oats at -0.90%. The gains of the day are led by canola at 0.86%, palm oil at 0.55%, and cotton at 0.54%. Metal commodities, the top gainers for the metal commodities are platinum at 1.64%, copper at 1.30%, and gold at 0.80%, while the biggest losers are iron ore CNY at 0.76% and steel rebar at 0.65%. Energy commodities have continued the same trend, with the top losers being crude oil WTI at 0.79%, Brent crude oil at 0.68% and natural gas EU Dutch at 0.61%, whereas the gains were led by natural gas at 0.69%. Retail sales in Taiwan declined by 0.6% year on year in April 2025, reversing a 0.4% increase in the previous month. The overall contraction was driven by weaker sales in motor vehicles and motorcycles, clearly and namely by -5.2% versus 4.4%, textiles and clothing by -6.4% versus -5.6%, household appliances and goods at -2.6% versus 2.9%, with information and communications equipment and electrical household appliances at -5.4% versus -0.6%, and fuel and related products at -5.1% versus 0.7%. In contrast, sale growth accelerated in food, beverages, and tobacco at 10.6% versus 4.4%. Other retail at 11.8% versus 6.2%, and cultural and recreational goods at 0.1% versus a loss of -2.3%. On a monthly basis, retail sales fell by 2.1% in April, following a strong 10.5% gain in the previous month. In other news, the euro held firm above the $1.13 mark, its highest level since May 6th, as investors digested a wave of economic data and its implications for the European Central Bank's monetary policy outlook. In Germany, in the quarter one GDP growth was revised up to 0.4%, the fastest pace since the third quarter of 2022, driven by strong household consumption and investment. Now, to news across our borders. Slight improvement in policing in South Africa.
Yes, to just share their perspective then on what we heard there. Dr. Simon Howell is a senior researcher at the Center for Criminology.
And meanwhile, police have arrested four suspects and recovered a rifle and several pistols in a major operation in Pangani, Nairobi. Among those arrested are three Ugandan nationals and a Kenyan. The operation comes amid rising concerns over insecurity in some parts of Nairobi County, with increasing reports of robberies and violent attacks. And as our reporter Kida Kasim now reports, the suspects are being held at Pangani Police Station as investigations continue.
Friday morning at the Pangani Police Station in Nairobi, police unveiled the results of a major intelligence-led operation that saw the recovery of three firearms and the arrest of four suspects.
Early hours of this morning, we managed to arrest four culprits. We can tell them, we can term them to be suspects who are associated with these firearms, as well as associated with the crimes which have been committed in those areas.
In his address at the station, Nairobi Regional Police Commander George Seda praised the collaboration between members of the public and law enforcement officers.
What has led us to the recovery is through that good coordination, the information from the public, also exploring the other aspect of technological aspects which the police we are having.
Seda noted that the weapons are now undergoing forensic analysis to determine whether they were used in past criminal activities in Nairobi or other parts of the country.
The persons who have been in the possession of these firearms, they have been committing series of crimes, robbery, within Nairobi. That is the Pangani area, Isili, and those are the sites of South Sea. The AK-47, we have recovered together with a magazine complete with 30 rounds. That's the maximum capacity. This one was being used by them in the execution of their mission.
Seda assured Nairobi residents that security will be heightened and anyone person found in possession of illegal firearms will be brought to justice. Akida Kasim, KTN.
SARS ramping up efforts to help taxpayers comply through the Project I'm a Billions project.
Back, the South African Revenue Service is turning over every stone and every bank account, not just for wealthy individuals with homes abroad. Even those dodging taxes right here at home are in the crosshairs, whether you owe the tax man a few thousand or indeed a few million rand. It's been dubbed a program, or rather Project I'm a Billions, and it aims to collect 50 billion rand every financial year after an additional 4 billion rand boost from National Treasury. Now, Newsroom Africa's Tokozo Kumalo, when I was giving you just a foretaste of what was to come, did clarify for us in Tokozo that it isn't the official name, I'm a Billions, but it has gained quite a lot of traction, hasn't it?
Absolutely, Michelle. It is, in fact, Commissioner who did clarify that when he had that media briefing with the Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana, just as he about to table the budget, and he did clarify that that's not the official name. But as you said, it is catchy, I suppose, to get South Africans' attention when it comes to this compliance drive that the Revenue Service is undertaking. Of course, part of that is to close that revenue gap that was opened up by the removal of the VAT hike. And I am here at the station where a lot of that action will be taking place when it comes to not only improving compliance, but also collecting on outstanding debts. And I am here with Donald Setati, who is the area head here at the Revenue Service. And before we went live, Donald, you were actually walking me around the station, helping me understand what it is exactly will be happening here. It does seem like an FBI sort of, you know, stakeouts, but talk us through just what exactly will be taking place here and the importance of this compliance drive.
Sure, thank you. Essentially, here we make use of our technology, all the data and artificial intelligence to monitor. We know exactly which taxpayer has an outstanding debt and outstanding return. When exactly is it due? And we obviously have increased capacity to be able to follow up on all those debts. So the important thing that we want to pass to our taxpayer base out there is that we would like to make it easy for you to comply. Our resources, which is the additional capacity that we've got, would be making a follow-up on all these outstanding returns and outstanding debt, assisting taxpayers to be able to comply and stay on the right side.
And Michelle, just to give you an indication, about 1,700 staff that the Revenue Service is looking to bring in for this. And I suppose also the key word, Donald, when we were speaking earlier, is you want to remove some of that fear from people. It is real time that you are watching all this data. For people who might have some debts that they owe to you, how do they then approach SARS to be able to just, you know, get in front of this issue before the tax man comes for them?
Obviously, as I said, the first thing and first and foremost, we'd like to make it easy for you. We've got mechanisms. You can come to our branches. You can interact with us through our digital channels, which is we've made it very easy so that you can be able to interact. We then pick up your queries, your applications, and then we assist you in terms of the processes in which you can make sure you settle your debt.
Donald, before I let you go, we were walking around. Could you maybe give our viewers a little bit of insights on the kind of data that the workforce here would be looking at? What sort of data do you see on a minute-to-minute or second-to-second basis? Behind me is the border post and so on, but just a slight taste of the sort of information that the Revenue Service looks at here.
Sure. Of course, one of the things is we monitor our infrastructure, which is the infrastructure that we use to house the staff, to be able to execute and take the calls in the contact center, make the calls to taxpayers that have an outstanding debt or debt that is due. We also real-time watch the debt as it becomes due, to send reminders to taxpayers to say, look, your debt has become due, when are you paying? And we then watch those real life.
And we do have tax season coming up. A final word as a representative of the Revenue Service for those who are filing. Companies obviously having to send through their documents by the end of the month to kick off that process. Just a word of advice for taxpayers in terms of being compliant so that we can see that uptick in revenue collection from the Revenue Service.
Sure. It's important that employers who have a deadline of the end of May submit their recons. And of course, we're going into personal income tax filing season that's coming in July. So individual taxpayers, get onto your e-filing, update your contact details. Just make sure that we've got your latest account number in case you find yourself in a refund position, that it is easy for us to be able to facilitate those processes as well.
Well, I'm hoping to boost my refund this year. Donald, thank you so much for talking to us. Of course, Michelle, Donald Setati is the area head.
Cross-border traders in Zambia call on the government to keep the appreciation of the kwacha to continue.
Many cross-border traders have been selling blankets for several years and can proudly highlight various achievements in their business endeavors. This year, these traders are optimistic about improved business outcomes, which they believe will largely depend on the performance of the kwacha against major currencies.
What determines our pricing here is the rates of the foreign currency that we are using. As you know, we don't manufacture blankets here in Zambia, so we get them from South Africa and Botswana. So if the rates are favorable, then the blankets will also be affordable. But the way we are looking at things, since now the dollar is slowly going down, we are expecting to have even the normal range of the selling price.
However, there are growing concerns regarding the current pricing, which many customers find troubling.
So challenge yetu mankana na business ingankare kwa batima blangeti, wantu wadanda batima blangeti ya dola. So munga business ya tutidinga na dola. So dola ikagwa nishina isi chita branch tugulisa. Dola ikakwela nishitinga na challenge chita branch yogulisa. Otherwise, business this year I promise a manje chabe mablangeti ya dola kwa metu order.
The traders who previously operated outdoors before the construction of the city market feel that their new placement within the market is detrimental to their business success.
It's time for Month End Magic at WB. Get a 1 kg Jungle Oats for only $37.99. 2 times 1.5 kg Real Good Mixed Chicken for $149.99 with Smart Buy. 5 kg Nice Rice for only $94.99 with Smart Buy. 2.2 kg Surf Hand Washing Powder for $49.99. And a Huggies Dry Comfort Value Pack for only $154.99. See all our month end specials at www.vurmanbrock.com. We care.
And welcome back. UN appeals for urgent funding to address full-scale humanitarian emergency.
The United Nations is calling for urgent funds to address a humanitarian emergency for tens of thousands of Ethiopian refugees. These refugees have fled conflict in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region to neighboring Sudan for safety, as the agency again requests full access to the embattled region.
Many refugees remain in overcrowded conditions without proper facilities, and there continues to be a shortage of medicine and other supplies. We have seen a huge demand for family tracing and reunification, education, and for child-friendly spaces and nutritional programs.
On Tuesday, the global body appealed for $156 million. So far, only 30% of the funds, $46 million, have been received.
The critical activities include registration, documentation, ensuring civilian character of asylum, the congesting of the border site areas, transferring refugees to the new settlements, provision of food, health and education services, support for groups with specific needs, particularly for women and girls at risk, unaccompanied minors, the disabled and the elderly.
Over the last 6 weeks, more than 52,000 refugees have fled Tigray to a remote area in neighboring Sudan, the UN said. The figure does not include 96,000 Eritrean refugees already in Tigray before the fighting began. Their fears, they're running low on food.
U.S. President blocks Harvard from enrolling foreign students.
Next, the U.S. government says it's blocking the prestigious Harvard University from enrolling foreign students with immediate effect. Well, Harvard relies heavily on fees from overseas students, and those currently studying there will now have to transfer elsewhere. The White House has accused the institution of fostering violence and anti-Semitism and says the university isn't doing enough to limit the power students have on campus. Harvard, on the other hand, says the government's acting illegally. The U.S. Homeland Security Secretary is Kristi Noem, and she told Fox News why the government's targeting Harvard.
They have promoted and allowed violent activity on campus. They have allowed anti-Semitism, participation with CCP and Chinese infiltration and influence on their campus, and they haven't protected their students. So we have given them multiple opportunities to share criminal activity with us, backgrounds on these students, to let us conduct the oversight into this program that is our responsibility, and they have refused to do so.
Well, our senior North America correspondent John Sudworth has more background on the story.
Well, almost from the moment of his inauguration, Donald Trump began pressuring America's elite universities over what he saw as woke ideology in their teaching and anti-Semitism on their campuses, in particular over their handling of pro-Palestinian protests. Harvard, though, was the first to really push back against some of that pressure, launching legal action over a decision to freeze some $2 billion of its federal grants and refusing to comply with the suggestion that it ought to alter its curriculum and its hiring practices. Now, the administration has clearly doubled down, halting Harvard's ability to enroll international students, who make up a quarter of its 24,000-strong student body and, of course, bring in a significant amount of income. In a letter to Harvard, the Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Noem, said this. She said that Harvard had been fostering violence, anti-Semitism, and coordinating with the Chinese Communist Party. It's unclear what this means for students who are currently enrolled and here on visas. The suggestion is that they may have to leave the United States unless they can find alternative courses with other universities. But Harvard, in its response, said this. It called the decision unlawful, and it says it threatened serious harm not only to the university but to the country. And it seems likely, many people suggest, that there will be further legal action over this decision, and so the fate of existing students may be now with the U.S. courts.
Donald Trump's white genocide in South Africa fact-checked.
Earlier this week, there were tense scenes in the Oval Office between U.S. President Donald Trump and his guest, South Africa's leader, Cyril Ramaphosa. Well, Mr. Trump says Mr. Ramaphosa's government has been carrying out what he has described as genocide against South Africa's white farmers. Well, our correspondent in South Africa, Phumza Philani, went to the area which Mr. Trump says was proof of this genocide, and she fact-checked it. Let's have a look at what she found.
Kill the white farmer and take their land.
A diplomatic meeting turned ambush. America's Donald Trump makes incendiary comments about what it's like to be a white farmer in South Africa.
These are all people that recently got killed.
His counterpart, President Cyril Ramaphosa, uncomfortable but composed, sits through the so-called evidence of the claims.
These are burial sites right here, over 1,000.
We've come to the location shown in that video played in the Oval Office. There are no graves. There's no graveyard. In fact, we now know that the crosses in that same video were part of a protest organized by a local community after the death of a couple that was killed here.
We're looking at Glenn and Vida Rafferty.
Roland Collier, a farmer, is their nephew and tells me he is still haunted by the gruesome find.
They'd broken, ransacked the house, broken open the safes. It was quite a hectic scene.
Despite the misleading use of the video, he says he's pleased violence on farms is receiving attention. So will he be taking up Mr. Trump's refugee offer?
No, I wouldn't. At this stage, I would definitely not think of going. I still love this country enough to be able to stay.
In a nearby village home to farm workers, residents were shocked by false claims this was the site of a white genocide. Bethwell Mabaso was born here.
I've lived here since I was a little boy, and this is a peaceful area. Nothing like those murders has happened in this community since.
And in South Africa, a country still recovering from a painful history of segregation, Mr. Trump's political baiting has reminded many of how delicate race matters can be here. Pumza Fihlani, BBC News, Normandine.
South Sudan resumes oil exports through Sudan.
And the refinery at Port Sudan affected key facilities, including Petco's Pump Station 5 and a major diesel depot, causing a complete stop in the flow of crude oil. The pipeline and associated infrastructure that South Sudan uses to export its crude oil pass through Sudan, making it critical for both nations to secure these facilities.
Of course, the refinery has recently suffered significant damage, especially to the old refinery. The entire units were destroyed. The crude distribution unit and the aircraft fuel unit were also completely damaged. All of these units were completely destroyed. We have also power supply and pipe racks, piping systems and power supply cables and instrument cables. All of these were destroyed along with substations in the old refinery.
Oil exports via Sudan's pipeline generate 90% of South Sudan's foreign exchange earnings, with Sudan earning transit fees. According to experts, the two pipelines had been out of service for more than 15 months earlier in the conflict, causing losses of production opportunity estimated to be worth $3 billion for South Sudan and $700 million for Sudan in transportation fees. One of the pipelines came back online earlier this month, but it was a target for the RSF.
The oil sector in Sudan has been severely affected by the war and the destruction it has caused. This includes the Khartoum oil refinery, pipelines, all the oil facilities. These have been damaged, including the oil storage facilities in Port Sudan. Resuming South Sudan's oil production and exporting it through Sudanese territory is a step of great importance for South Sudan. The country relies on oil for 80 to 85% of its economy as a source of foreign exchange and budget revenue. Therefore, of course, Sudan has been severely affected by the suspension of oil exports.
Reports indicate that South Sudan had been sending between 100,000 to 150,000 barrels of crude oil daily to Sudan for export. Analysts say the pipeline damage led to environmental contamination and rising of food prices, further deteriorating the region's severe hunger crisis and causing damage estimated at $500 million. Beryl Oro, CGTN.
Germany economy in the first quarter grew twice as fast as initially expected.
The German economy grew significantly more in the first quarter than previously thought. A second estimate published Friday revealed the economy grew by 0.4% in the quarter compared with the previous. Germany's sluggish economy has not grown at that pace since 2022, when it expanded 0.6%. Economic growth was driven by trade and consumption, and manufacturing output and exports registered stronger growth than initially assumed in March. Exports rose by 3.2% as US importers brought their purchases forward in anticipation of tariffs. Household consumption also saw stronger growth. By contrast, government spending declined by 0.3%. According to the Statistics Office, this is due to the provisional budget. Germany had contracted in the final quarter of last year by 0.2%, reigniting recession fears. A recession is defined as two consecutive quarters of negative growth. It had also been expected to be badly affected by tariffs due to its export-oriented economy. The US was Germany's biggest trading partner in 2024, with two-way goods trade totaling over $286 billion.
What to expect from Trump's visit to the Middle East?
President Trump is returning to the Gulf and doubling down on Riyadh, underscoring the Middle East's new weight in global deal-making.
I have a very good relationship with the Middle East.
It's a paradigm shift in the post-war order. The president is betting on the Gulf's $4 trillion in sovereign wealth and its critical role in mediating conflicts from Ukraine to Gaza.
The administration's objective? Bringing Middle East capital into the U.S. and asking Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to boost a promised $600 billion to roughly $1 trillion.
Every country throughout the last 40, 50 years has literally ripped off the United States on trade, on military, on protection, on all the different things. And we are now making fair deals.
But the question for markets is, will the investments be enough to blunt the impact of Trump's broad-based tariffs? Expect pomp and maybe a, quote, very, very big announcement, the president teases. Investors will be looking for specifics, energy partnerships, defense sales, perhaps even hints of a broader peace agreement in the region. Anne-Marie Hordern, Bloomberg News.
And with that, we come to the end of On the Radar News Bulletin. Stay tuned for Ongundala Dingy with David Shumbe, followed by The Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut at 4:30. Don't forget, The Villager is now available with more in-depth stories and analysis. As we kick off the end of May, we wish you a wonderful end of the month. May it bring fresh opportunities. Have a great weekend, and until next time, goodbye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is EagleFMNamibia.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077. No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Audio mnangeshefa no hara kushivifa oma kuroyo kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mukuru olongaha. Ninge kwata fano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konora hetatu imwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mamberewa konora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye. Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is EagleFM Namibia.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the EagleFM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077. No matter where you are,